This is a News Laundry podcast, and you're listening to Awful and Awesome.
Hello and welcome to the Awful and Awesome Entertainment Wrap, episode 348. I'm Abbas.
And I'm Nanika.
And when the inmates are away, when the guards are away, the inmates will play. I always screw up this line. I don't know why.
You almost forgot your punchline. That is not done.
I know. Or maybe I've turned into an authoritarian now and I see myself as a guard more than an inmate.
Yeah, I guess, you know, we've been doing this for a while. I think you have to come up with something new. Even the line is like, maybe it's not working out between us.
All right. So we'll be talking about some pop culture stuff, some releases that happened in the last week. We're going to be talking about two major Netflix releases. One of them star Andrew Scott of Fleabag fame, every woman's favorite man on the planet. We're going to be talking about Scoop, which is a new expose journalism film about the Prince Andrew scandal that happened, which is not related with the Hansal Mehta scoop that happened, that was released in India. Then we'll talk about some ad campaign songs that some major political parties have released. We'll talk about whether they worked on us or not to vote for their respective parties. And finally, we'll be talking about something I requested for, which is WrestleMania 40. Which, despite my best efforts, I wasn't able to have Nanika watch the full thing over the weekend.
I mean, it did make sense because I completely lack context. Like, I don't know what that is. The other day, my coworker, you know, apparently there's one of those WWE wrestlers where his tagline, his punchline is "Booyaka, Booyaka." I didn't even know what that was. So you can realize how much context I lack to be watching anything close to wrestling. So I was just like, maybe let's not dip my feet into it. I'll just let you talk about it. I think that's far better.
Yeah, that wrestler, by the way, was Rey Mysterio, who's a Latino wrestler.
You know, I keep confusing Rey Mysterio and Lothario for some reason. But
once, by the way, had a mask versus mask match where the stipulation was that if you unmask them, then they lose the match. But anyway, that's a whole
interesting
area.
The
of
lore runs deep, clearly.
Very, very, very deep. This is what happened in the world of entertainment and pop culture this week. Cruise starring Tabu, Kareena and Kriti Sanon has entered the 100 crore club within 9 days of its release on the big screen.
Curb Your Enthusiasm aired its final season 12 finale on Sunday on HBO. Creator Larry David did a callback to his other iconic sitcom, The Seinfeld, in the final episode.
Veteran cinematographer Gangu Ramsey passed away on 7th April at the age of 83. He was part of the famous Ramsey brothers, known for their cult horror shows and movies like Zee Horror Show, Purani Haveli and Tehkhana.
Monkey Man, the Dev Patel directorial, which released in North America last week, has recovered its modest budget of $10 million in just 3 days of its release. And we're all cheering for that. I can't wait for this movie to be here. Abbas was the one who has always been, you know, sort of rooting for this movie to do well. So are you happy to hear that it's doing well?
I'm happy. It's got mixed reviews, but I'm excited to see it. But I don't know if it's getting an Indian release. So
I don't think that's happening either. Fingers crossed. But otherwise, we'll catch it on streaming. So that will happen.
Yes. So let's start with Ripley. Nanika, you've seen 5 episodes and I've seen 2 episodes. Ripley is based on there's a movie made on this, I think in the early 2000s called
1999. So 1999. It's actually, it's even Mr. Talented Mr. Ripley is based on Patricia Highsmith's book. 1955 is when it came out. And the book is also titled Talented Mr. Ripley. So the show is based on that. I haven't watched, I'm really coming out here as somebody, but I haven't watched Talented Mr. Ripley, so I don't know how many motifs the movie carries from the original 1999 movie, but it's definitely based on the plot of the book. So
even I haven't seen the original film, and every listener right now is going, and you call yourself a cinephile? I'm sorry. I think the 1999 film, I think, was based in the present time for that in the 90s.
Yes.
This one is more faithful to the time period the novels are set in.
You see, if cell phones existed, the plot of the movie wouldn't exist. So it has to be faithful to a time where we can have complete suspension of disbelief about the happening. happenings, about the ongoings of what is of the plot. So I guess that's why it needed to be in that time zone.
It's about a scamster, correct?
It's about, yeah, I mean, scamster is like a loose term. I think he's more just like your garden variety psychopath of sorts. Like a scamster implies a certain degree of hustle. And this guy was not hustling. Like, let's be so real.
Ouch. Poor Ripley.
Poor Ripley. I mean, he did. He got rich. But, you know, like a scamster, a grifter, a hustler is very different from someone who just like does minor identity theft once in their life. And even then, they almost got caught. So, not very good at their job.
So, it's, I think, six episodes?
Eight episodes.
So, I saw two of them. And the first thing that strikes me, of course, is the look of the show. It's short and stark, black and white.
Oh, my God. I wanted to talk about that as well. Go on, Abbas. Tell me.
At least the first two episodes feature Italy very prominently.
Yes.
I should mention the show is created by Steve Zalian, I think his name is.
Yes.
And he's like one of the most legendary screenwriters in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. He was he's worked with Scorsese, he's worked with Spielberg. I think he's been a writer on Schindler's List. So like the biggest of
his resume is pretty decent.
Yeah, yeah. So he's the creator of this particular series. And straight off the bat, you can tell. So the 1999 film, I think the runtime of that is under 2 hours. But this one, like you said, is eight episodes long.
Correct.
So they want to delve deeper into the story and into the character. But let's address Andrew Scott first of all. So he, of course, reached monumental levels of fame by playing the hot priest in Fleabag.
No. You're erasing a very important part of his career. He was Moriarty in Sherlock before he was the hot priest in Fleabag. So there's like a generation of girls on Tumblr, especially, who were raised looking at Andrew Scott.
Even as Moriarty, he was hot Moriarty.
No, he wasn't hot Moriarty, but he was a very interesting, like psychologically twisted, very dark character. So there's like, you know, like young women have real kinship with the fucked up characters. So I think
the moment you said chops. Tumblr, I filled up the rest of the
autofill. Yes. So he gained a lot of popularity doing that. And then he got mainstream popularity playing the hot priest in Fleabag. And I mean, the caveat is like, you know, you did say that he's every woman's favorite man. And for like a certain demographic, that's 100% true. And it's also strange because Andrew Scott is not straight. So that explains a lot.
I feel like every woman finds this, and like there's a rite of passage when every straight woman finds this out about Andrew Scott. And then something in their heart breaks. And then they're never the same in their lives again.
I guess. Maybe. That is true. Because he did play a very, you know, like a I think after
Desirable.
Fleabag is when that trend of like men written by women started. Because Fleabag, the hot priest's character was clearly written by a woman in the sense that he was a man who was very sensitive, listened to women, in touch with his feminine side. So, you know, he started the men written by women trend, and Andrew Scott is pretty much part of the cultural lexicon at this point. So this is another wonderful project from him. I thought he was very good in the show. Like, his acting chops are pretty much there. He also just has that little fucked up look about him. Like, something about him is just, you can't trust him fully. And I think, like, because he has good experience playing Moriarty. So there's that thing about him where you don't necessarily put your full faith in him. And I think that makes him a great character, like a great gray character on screen. What did you think about him?
I mean, like I said, the first two episodes that I saw, the first episode takes its time to really establish what's going on, which I like. I think the fact that you have the liberty to do eight hour long episodes, you have the liberty to sort of build up the story. But like I said, because it's shot so beautifully, it's not like you ever feel like switching it off. I mean, there's a sequence in the first episode where Ripley, our protagonist, has to climb a set of stairs again and again.
Correct.
For something. And in a regular sort of imagination, you would be like, "Ek insan, how many times will he climb the same stairs? Wouldn't it get boring? Just watching him climb those stairs, that scene is true. So gorgeous to look at. So I think it takes its time to build up, but once it grabs you, it definitely holds you there. The reason I haven't been able to watch the rest of the episodes is just that I haven't been able to find the time. It's not like I don't want to watch the rest of them, which I will. There's also a very peculiar cat in the first episode, yes, which I am told plays a big part, yes, in the future episodes.
So I think Ripley, this particular show, markets itself as a noir show. So it completely makes sense that the pacing is very, very slow. It absolutely will not lend to like somebody who's very attuned to binge watching, or you're attuned to just finishing a series very quickly. It does not lend itself to, you know, your standard streaming episode. So the first episodes always have to be a little explosive, yeah, and a little like they have to do something to garner the attention. Mm-hmm. Ripley very much subverts that. It does not care about, you know, whether it locks and loads its audience completely. You could pause the show at any point and it's a masterpiece. It's a gorgeous, it's beautifully shot, and I feel like the way it looks, the aesthetics of how it presents itself are a big part of the pull for it, because I feel like shows are just not beautiful anymore. You feel a certain amount of despair at the bottom of your stomach knowing that the protagonist that you're watching on screen isn't necessarily a good person, and you're not going to see like something bright and wonderful happen on screen. You're going to look at somebody who's a little psychopathic and carry out what they will, which is a little far off from the movie Talented Mr. Ripley, because what little I've seen of it, it's like very bright, it's very colorful. This one is not. It has a very clear air of despair about it, but I do like that to a certain degree.
Okay.
So, okay. Yeah. But did you like the noir aspects of it? Like, you know, does it feel like a proper... I mean, you're somebody who really likes noir, so...
I love noir, yeah. I was just going to mention that. Yeah, I think the black and white photography of noir films, I mean, there's a lot of stuff about it online. You can check it out. But there's that aspect of, you know, noir is about essentially it's a crime story, which is unraveling
slowly. The darkness at the pool of humanity.
Yes, so it's quite literally about the black and white of life, right?
Right.
And how what are the depths of darkness a person can be pushed into is always a big aspect of it. But I did wonder at times when I was looking at those gorgeous Italian locales, where I was like, would this have worked if it was in color? And I think we'll never know. But I like that choice. I like that, you know, that Netflix has given someone a budget to shoot an 8-episode series in black and white at a time when you said, you know, there's the economy of eyeballs is so important for them, where everything has to be bright and shiny and has to catch your attention.
Correct.
So it's good to know that, you know, as much as we criticize Netflix for throwing everything on the wall and seeing what sticks, they are taking these little chances. They also did that film Roma, Alfonso Cuarón's Roma, which was also shot in gorgeous black and white. So yeah, I think that's an art form. I think that if you incorporate it in a good way, you can do wonders with it. So I'm looking forward to it. I want to watch the rest of it, and the music, the language, you know, when Andrew Scott Ripley's communicating with Italians without knowing a word of Italian, those are pretty funny, well done scenes. So overall, yeah, even I really liked what I saw. So if you're someone who's wondering whether to give it a shot, please do. I think Ripley will be quite rewarding for you.
I mean, the whole point of the show is that it is not, it's going to subvert your expectation of what a show should look like and how it should behave, and it completely still surprises you. I feel like another of those things is I'm not sure how profitable it's going to be. It's like it's a limited series, so there's going to be no part two, nothing. It's going to come out and then it's pretty much done. And I think it's aimed more towards like a slightly more serious audience, because I think Netflix was losing out... the street cred, where people were joking
about the grown-ups.
The people were joking about the fact that Netflix shows all look the same. So I feel like, you know, the average audience's tastes have become a little too attuned to, like, you know, something that can just play in the background. Netflix that can play in the background. This is the kind of show that you have to take
This is so. I mean, I'm thinking that in a few minutes time we'll be talking about wrestling in a bit. So I'm just like. Sure, let's go with talking about what grown-ups should watch and should
No, nothing about what grown-ups should watch, but just like Talented Mr. Ripley's already been adapted. So this wasn't that they were bringing something new to the screen. They were taking a somewhat well-known story and, you know, just taking like a really luxurious amount of time with it, sort of living the story in an aesthetic sense that it needs to be done. So it really, in that sense, feels like somebody's passion project. And I think that is, personally for me, I think that really matters a lot. I love it when a show is just like, it's less about whether it's whether it's going to have explosive popularity, and more about the fact that whether it's beautiful and whether the person who made it really cared for it or not. So I really, really rate Ripley highly for that. I'm 5 episodes done. I do take issues with the pacing, but then I also realize that this is a creative choice. And rather than criticizing the show for being slow, I need to bring myself at peace and slow down a little to be able to watch it. Another thing I will say that the characters are very beautifully well done, very thoughtfully designed. Like in this starting, Ripley clearly comes from a poorer background as compared to Dickie. So he dresses like a poor person. You can see how he slouches, how he slumps, how his trousers fall on his body, that this is a guy not coming from money, and how he has to adapt to Dickie's mannerisms. And it's a guy who clearly comes from money. So he has to slowly, that obsession with how much he wants to, has to really embody the guy to be able to, you know, take his identity upon himself. So I feel that way. I feel like it's so beautifully done, so thoughtfully designed in every single motif of it, that you really have to bring your attention span. You have to slow down and, you know, sort of tailor yourself to watch the show, as opposed to the show being tailor-made for something to you to watch on Netflix. So right. I really All like right. that.
All right, before we move on, I have a small announcement, which is about the TNM NL Election Fund. That's the News Minute and News Laundry Election Fund. Ahead of the upcoming general elections, News Laundry has tied up with the News Minute yet again to bring you important stories straight from the ground. This time, instead of one big fund project, we are doing smaller projects, so you can choose which one you would like to power. We will have more than 15 reporters, producers, and editors from the NL and TNM team on the ground covering various states, including Manisha, Atul, Dhanya, and Sudipto. And your contributions will directly power their work. So head to newslaundry.com/2024-election fund. That's newslaundry.com/2024-election fund. Please head to the link to contribute so that you can get a good and fair assessment and coverage of the upcoming elections. All right, the next thing we're talking about is, again, something that we usually don't review on this show, but since the elections are coming up, as I mentioned in the announcement, so all the major political, at least the three major political parties we'll be talking about, have released their official songs. So, Nainika, I believe you've heard 2 of the 3 songs
yes,
that were
I
sent
have.
To us.
Yes, I have. I really gave them a lot of time and a lot of thought.
By the way, I should mention, so 2 of these songs, the Congress and the BJP songs, are in Hindi. Mm-hmm. And the TMC song, understandably, is in Bengali. So since I think both of our Bengali is very limited, there's only... and surprisingly, the TMC song was on YouTube, but they haven't added captions. So,
oh, so you couldn't
I don't know why
understand.
I'm giving advice yeah. to the TMC team. But guys, if you're listening to this and if your song is in Bengali, maybe just add the subtitles so that we can understand what you're listening to. But let's start with the BJP song, which is the only one I think that has an official title. It's called
that
Modi Ka Parivar.
Yes.
And,
but that's also like their election campaign of sorts. Like they launched it for a while.
That's what
while
I
want
to talk about.
So.
It's less of a party song and more of an individual, a song praising an individual.
Well,
we
I
all
mean,
know which individual.
Even in 2014, when Modi came to power for the first time, the motive was Ab Ki Baar Modi Sarkar. So I think BJP has always been very clear that they're going to project one person as the face of the party to sort of unite everybody's efforts to that one place. So like,
at least there was Sarkar to it. Now it's like, even forget Sarkar
no,
also.
No,
just
Sarkar Parivar now. No, Parivar. Sarkar se aage badh gaye. Abbas, like it's more homely so, now. It's more emotional.
Sorry. Whether you know it or not, you are part of Modi's family.
Absolutely.
We are all
We're all part
family.
Of Modi's family.
But 2014, it was Ab Ki Baar Modi Sarkar. 2019, it was Phir Ek Baar Modi Sarkar. And this time it's Ab Ki Baar 400 Paar. So what do you think of the song? I think it's a very sort of supposed to be a soulful song.
Yes.
And it comes with a video, of course, a music video.
Of course. You can't just have a song. Nobody's going to listen to it on Spotify. It has to come with a music video. So you can play it.
So the song essentially is enumerating the good things that the government has supposedly done. And then it comes, and the 10th, the the voice of the song is praising the Prime Minister.
Right.
And he said, unhone sab kuch kiya hai aur wo aapke liye kar rahe hai. And then, of course, it cuts to the chorus where the man himself, they've taken an audio bite from a rally.
Right.
And then he says, kiska parivar or something like, kiska kaun parivar? And then the audience is like, Modi ka parivar.
Right, right.
You know?
Yes.
Which I think was a little like, I mean, like Modi ji can do no wrong, but his register, the voice, they've not auto-tuned the voice. Like, when it's singing in a this thing and suddenly it's like Modi ka, and then you're like, at least match up the scale of the song.
Well, I guess you can criticize their creative choices quite a bit, which is
While you can.
I did think that the song was like a little catchy. Like in the end, they do this motif where you have people from a bunch of different languages saying that we are Modi ka parivar. So you have somebody in Bangla saying we're Modi ka parivar, somebody
yes,
in Tamil
end.
Saying we're Modi ka parivar. Yes. So sort of, you know, to pan India unity to bring that on the forefront. And I think this Modi ka parivar thing was a retort to somebody saying that he doesn't have a family.
I think when he or someone from his party was asked about this, I think the reply was ke Modi ji ka 2 crore logon ka parivar hai. Like, a bunch of times we see women wearing hijabs lip syncing to the song. We see Modi ji, I think, putting a garland or a medal on a Sikh gentleman, and
a couple
of cutaways to Kashmir as well. Kashmir and the Northeast. So for all intents and purposes, it's like a traditional election song.
Correct.
Which tries to reach out to everyone. Nainika, on a scale of 1 to 5, how much would you like to rate Modi ka Parivar?
Are you asking me if it's a banger or not?
Yes, I am very much.
I think it's 3 on the banger scale. Like,
not bad.
I may, you know, if somebody remixed it onto a DJ set at a house party, I would be like, curious choice, but I wouldn't hate it.
Will it make you vote for the BJP?
Who knows? But if you expose somebody to the song for the first time, I don't think it's groundbreaking enough for a new person, like
exactly,
somebody
that
who's
was
just
my thing also.
Got an Indian citizenship. Yeah, like they just got Indian citizenship and they'd be like, oh my God, this banger, this producer I'm 100% voting for. I don't think the song is that good. So I suppose they were supposed to tick off a box and build like a jingle.
So they have
managed to build a jingle and they put a lot of effort into the video. So I guess they definitely got like a good creative agency to do the work for it. So good for them in that regard. 3 on 5 banger, 3 stars,
done.
I guess. Good enough, yeah.
Okay, let's come to the Congress theme song or the election song.
My first takeaway from this was it's a depression ballad. Like, let's be so clear about that.
Hey,
like,
can you blame it? It's a Congress
song. Yeah, exactly.
Song.
I was just like, it's a Congress song, so it completely checks out because the whole vibe is like, hame milega nyay and, you know, andhere se hokar ja. So essentially, the whole vibe is very humko man ki shakti dena because, you know, clearly they're down in the dump, so they need all
that's the true faith
and hope that they can get right now. And that's what the song is trying to get to. So it's supposed to be like, it's very clearly like a depression song, I guess. I don't think it's
not as
high on the banger scale. Like, I'm
really?
Sorry.
Okay.
Did you like it more? Did you think it was more of a banger?
So I'll tell you what, the BJP song and the Congress song, they both sounded to me like rejected songs by Pritam. Where probably he...
I think they sound rejected Prasoon Joshi songs, not Pritam.
Oh, he composed them also?
No, I don't think so. But maybe, I mean, I got the vibe. Because I think Prasoon Joshi is the guy who sang your Tare Zameen Par type songs, right? Like, so.
That's true.
Also, family songs.
Prasoon Joshi of Aap Mein Badi Fakiri fame. I was saying, these two songs, they're like, they could be like on your average Bollywood album. They will not be the most popular song, but they're in there as act as fillers.
Correct.
Also, the music video for this, you can tell, of course, that the current government has way more budgets to spend on the video, because the Modi Parivar video, like I said, it's shot in HD and they have
Correct.
The Kashmir valleys.
And it was shot specifically for the song
for this,
itself.
Yes, yes.
The Congress song is like they've taken clips from other pile footage.
From, pile yes, footage from Bharat pile Jodo footage.
So yeah, I mean, you can clearly see who is going through depression and who's thriving.
On a banger scale of 1 to 5, how much would you rate the
I'm going to have to say 2. It just didn't get me. And because I can tell it's a depression ballad, I'm like, not fun. It's like, you know, when both the songs are the equivalence of when, you know, girls going through something. So they start putting cryptic stories on their Instagram. So it's like that. Like the Congress song is very much like going through something, but still having hope, rose emoji, heartbreak emoji kind of a vibe to it. So yeah.
I'd give this 2.5. I think I give the previous one 3. Because like brownie points for the BJP team to cutting to Modi ji saying "Kiska parivar,"
yes, you know, so yes, you're incorporating yes. Slick, the, yes. you
know, yeah. Now you haven't heard the TMC song, right?
Right. How is it?
The TMC song is a banger because
like
firstly,
a certified 5 out of 5, like mix it with
not
the five, DJ
not
track.
That good also. Okay, it's not Korbol or Jitbore, but it is like the BJP and Congress is like, you know, soulful, like you said,
right.
They're urging people to please come vote for us.
Right.
TMC is like, we're gonna bang drums, we're gonna get if people don't vote for us, we don't
like
care.
It's
we
a
make
war
them
cry
it.
It's not a ballad, it's not like
yes.
It's not a Sanskrit shlok, it's like
no
let's get out
also,
of here
also the BJP song and the Congress song, the BJP is praising Modi, the Congress
correct.
One is like, oh, Rahul Gandhi is amazing. The TMC, of course, right up front you see Mamata Banerjee walking to a rally. Within the first 20 seconds, it takes a dig at Amit Shah, okay, which none of the others do.
It's a diss track. It's a diss track. It's a proper rap diss track.
So again, I could make out like very vaguely what they're saying because the song is in Bengali and a lot of Bengali words are very similar to Hindi.
Right.
So I could tell they're talking about corruption and I don't know why I said corruption.
Okay. Okay.
That's how good the song is.
It's bringing the Bengali flavor to it too.
It's taking a dig at the opponents, and it's also glorifying not just Mamata Banerjee, but you also see a lot of couple of other TMC leaders also. But I liked that you know you can play this at Durga Puja, you can play this at any pandal, and it'll instantly get people dancing. So right out there for me, if you had to rank these songs, the TMC one is like way above the
on
other
the banger scale. Okay,
on the banger scale because it's right up there. So maybe I don't know much about TMC's politics, but they know how to get a...
So
get a
if you going. Walked into India and the moment you walked in and they handed you like a voter ID and they were like, okay, listen to 3 songs and basis on that, you will vote for a government. Will you go for TMC?
Without question. I was like, these people know how to party and these people know how to fight. So I'm going there.
I'm going for that. Huh.
Like, Parivar and whatever, what. I don't know. Like these people.
But have you ever had any other political campaign song that you really
Course, he's not going through the best times right now, but Paat Saal Kejriwal by Vishal Dadlani was like, that was also a banger. Like, have you heard it?
I haven't actually. I might go back and listen to it. So because if it's Vishal Dadlani, then I presume that it's like a bit of a, like a desi rock banger of sorts.
Yeah, it was. The chorus was like, Paat Saal Kejriwal. It's like that again.
Okay.
So yeah, it was a banger. So yeah, that's the one I remember. I remember Udit Narayan in 2014 had this thing. I don't remember the chorus was, it was for the BJP and this chorus was like, Modi aane wala hai. So that's all I remember.
Interesting. Another thing and, I think very important that I thought about the BJP song was like, you know, everybody, like a bunch of minorities, like, he got me a job, he got me this, he gave me Sahara and this and that. But almost it's like he's a god to the family. Like he's like the presiding, like, you know, the father figure, the patriarchal father figure to the family. I was like, very nice. It's a good way to mythologize yourself. Very interesting.
But yeah, I think the links of these songs will be in the the description, so you can check them out yourself and tell us what ratings you would give. Yeah. Purely on a musical scale, guys.
Purely keep on a musical scale, like whether it's a banger or not, and if you just walked into India with a voter ID, would the song make you want to vote for them or not?
Or vote for them, yes.
Please write to us and tell us about that.
Okay, let's talk about the next Netflix thing we're talking about, which is a film called Scoop, which stars Gillian Anderson, Billy Piper, Rufus Sewell. A couple of people in this star cast are also well-known. Of course, Gillian Anderson is the most well-known name. I was wondering where I've seen Billy Piper, who plays the
You
the
have seen her in Doctor Who.
I have seen her in Doctor Who, yeah. Yes. How did you guess that?
Because that was her breakout role, right?
Correct, yes. She plays the sidekick to the Doctor. Yes. I forgot what she's called. But Scoop is about the Prince Andrew scandal that broke out where his connections with Jeffrey Epstein were addressed in this one BBC interview. And although it was speculated since a long time that he was involved in this, that one interview is like the pivotal moment where it was sort of established that, you know, there's something fishy going on. I've seen about 40% of the film and I was very skeptical going in because I'm like, ek interview pe, like how much of a narrative can you build?
Correct.
But it actually kept me quite engaged. I thought it was very, I'm slightly biased to these journalist expose kind of films, like Spotlight is one that comes to mind. And yeah, whenever journalists are doing their job well in a movie, I'm like, yes, you go.
Go for it. You go, girl. Jinx.
Also, there was that film, show, right? The Aaron Sorkin show. Iske clips viral hote rehte.
The Newsweek.
Newsroom.
Right.
Yeah, which was very, which I like a lot. Nanika, did you see it and what did you think of it?
So I watched the full movie. I think I was preoccupied with something halfway there. So it didn't feel as laborious to me for sure. I felt like the plot was rather concise. It didn't, I think the movie runtime isn't even a lot. It's one and a half hours at best.
It's 1 hour, 40 minutes.
It's not a long movie at all. But also, to be very honest, there's not a lot happening plot-wise. It's the fact that they were hustling, like this sort of essentially the story is that they're trying to make sure that the interview happens. And it's not, I mean, if you're BBC, it's not very difficult to get an interview with a member of the royal family. Like, let's be real about that. But essentially, the rest of the movie is about how they prepare for the interview and how Prince Andrew is very clearly, you know, not in the right, and how they sort of nail him on that show. They cross question him to a degree and he clearly fumbles and, you know, just reveals himself to be who he is. And that way, I felt like Gillian Anderson, she's done like a decently good job. I really enjoy seeing Gillian Anderson in anything she does. So I think that way the movie was decent, but it wasn't out of the world for me.
Okay.
I think partly also because ever since the Epstein scandal has broken, I feel like there's a certain section of society, or I suppose like liberal society, that considers the Epstein scandal to be like a little thing that they can, like they don't necessarily care about the women who were victimized by the scandal, but more they like the aura of how the people who were revealed to be complicit in the scandal are just like rich, characterless freaks, and less about the victims of the scandal.
So I don't disagree with anything you said right now. I think it's very relevant that, like, even I didn't think of it the way, like you said right now, that the survivors of this or the victims of this have almost become secondary.
Correct.
But the Epstein case is almost like a genre of entertainment in itself.
Yes,
right?
It is.
Right. So then, I mean, hasn't that ship sailed a little bit, where it's like if you really had to, and the media is also to blame for it, the media and the internet.
Correct.
The fact that this whole thing, like, it's the kind of stuff it's every conspiracy theorist's wet dream.
Yes,
correct?
Exactly. Like, oh, it's literally a conspiracy theory at this point, more than the fact that, you know, what happens to the victims happen to the victims. Mm-hmm. It's like they'll pull out flight logs to be like, this person was at the island. Okay, yes, this person was at the island. What are you doing about it, as opposed, you know, just like pointing fingers? You know, those people are going to go completely scot-free. It doesn't change anything for you.
Right.
You just like to be able to point out, look at the flight logs and be like, oh, all the rich are in some sort of cahoots with each other, and they secretly abuse
women. But then
women.
isn't bringing the objective to bring down these powerful men also a means to sort of give justice to the people.
Think for what Newsnight actually did on its own, you know, bringing Prince Andrew, having this interview so that he ended up being stripped of his royal duties is definitely right. Like, I think they did something valuable there. But this movie being made, which had like a very, anyway, I mean, I'm not debating the morality of it. I don't think the movie.
What I'm trying to get at is that, like you said, that you know they're going to, these powerful men are probably going to go scot-free.
Yes.
Isn't that the root of the problem that we're trying to get at? That,
yes, yes. So I feel like...
This man had access to ex-presidents and, yes. you know, the movie producers and whatnot. And in the social structure that we live in, we've seen that these men barely, if ever, pay the price for the...
Correct.
Possibly horrible things they did.
Right.
So wouldn't you then say that this being reiterated again and again, like I feel like every 3 months there's a new list which is released of Epstein's clients. So, and then the cycle of jokes starts again. Mm-hmm. Like there was this whole thing where Stephen Hawking was in one of the lists.
That was quite...
And people were like, oh, Stephen Hawking was freaky or like to get freaky or whatever.
And the jokes that came out of it were very nasty. Like, I'm not particularly someone who's offended by it. It's fine by me if you want to make jokes about it. But the jokes were nasty. Like, let's be real.
All right. So those were our opinions about the film Scoop, which is on Netflix right now. All right. So to wrap this up, let's get to WrestleMania.
Yes, Abbas, I can tell that you've been itching to talk about it. You have a big smile on your face. You insisted on it. So before we get into it, you have to explain it like I'm five. What is WrestleMania? Is it connected to WWE?
I was prepared for this.
Of course.
Okay. So, all right, I'm assuming a lot of listeners and viewers right now probably are not the biggest wrestling fans. So WrestleMania is essentially the biggest live event that the WWE puts out. It happens generally either from the last, like between the last week of March and the first week of April. And it is like, you can say it's the season finale of all the storylines, of all the magnificent big budget stuff that they want to do. The WWE puts its show. It used to be a one night event. Now it's because they have so much to do and so much to say, it's turned into a two night event.
So is it televised? Is it live? Can you get tickets to go
live.
And watch it?
Yes. Can you get tickets? Like the tickets go, like they're sold out within seconds. And then there's a whole industry online which sells tickets.
Bootleg tickets.
Black. Yes. So it happens at like this weekend, it happened in Philadelphia. It happens in a new place, in a new city every year. I forget the name of the
Do the cities
stadium,
bid for it like the Olympics? Like the LA's put in a bid, like I'll give $5 million to host WrestleMania.
Actually, yeah. So again, okay.
I was just going
to
make a throwaway joke.
Say.
I didn't realize they take it very seriously over there.
So essentially, that's the thing about wrestling, right? WWE. Initially, WWE used to do the events in like whatever arenas and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But now mayors like
buy
for WrestleMania to come to their show.
So it's like the Olympics in that sense. That's lovely.
I mean, it is kind of like the Olympics of wrestling in a way, with a lot more like razzmatazz and camp thrown in. But it's a whole week long activity. So they essentially camp out in this one city. So Monday, the televised shows, WWE has two televised shows called Raw and SmackDown. So there's Monday night Raw before WrestleMania. Then there's SmackDown before WrestleMania on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Then on Friday night, they do the Hall of Fame ceremony. Then on Saturday, they do a 2-hour pre-show. And then the first night of WrestleMania happens, which runs for 4 hours. Then the next night, they give out the Slammy Awards, which are like these internet awards for like whatever, best entrance, best performer of the year, whatever, whatever. That happens on Sunday afternoon. Then they do 4 hours of WrestleMania again that night, Sunday night, which is the big, big finale. Then less than 24 hours, they do another episode of Monday Night Raw, which addresses the fallout of all the storylines that were wrapped up in WrestleMania. Anyways... So these people have no time to like rest, no time to sleep. Essentially, whatever city they pick becomes the mecca of WrestleMania. Why was WrestleMania 40 important? Okay, three reasons. Firstly, because of course it's the 40th year of them doing this show. So it had to be like grand and big and all of that. Now, the next two reasons, one is an on-screen reason, one is an off-screen reason. The on-screen reason was that Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, mm-hmm. returned to again sort of dip his toes in WrestleMania. And now here's something you should understand. The Rock is the biggest movie star on the planet. So
what was his last Marvel movie? Adam something?
No, that was not Marvel. That was DC. I'm just going to list very, very calmly.
Sorry. What was his last DC movie?
Black Adam.
Right. It flopped so hard. He was like, I might as well go back to make my losses, to cover my losses.
Yes. So not only has The Rock come back in WWE, the WWE recently changed their ownership. They are now owned by a company called TKO.
Okay.
And The Rock is now on the board of directors of TKO. So it's literally your boss showing up at work to wrestle his employees, and you can't do anything about it. The Rock shows up. The Rock in the last 10 years has been playing this movie star persona where he comes, he gets, says the famous lines, he gets the cheers, and then he fucks off. Okay.
Right.
And then he
cashes a big check in the process.
Sorry, cashing checks. Yes. This time around when he came, he was supposed to fight a match with Roman Reigns, who's been the WWE champion for the last 3.5 years. There's a whole big story which I would not like to go into. Now, his challenger was supposed to be this third guy called Cody Rhodes, who comes from a lineage of wrestling. He's the son of a very legendary wrestler called Dusty Rhodes. And there was a fan backlash online where people were like, oh, just because The Rock is a movie star and a board of directors of TKO, he can just come and take a championship match. So The Rock and the writers of WWE pivoted and spun this whole story around so that now The Rock is the bad guy in the WWE storyline. And he played the bad guy so well, like forget Black Adam. This should have been like his Oscar
magnum
nomination.
Magnum opus, his Academy.
He would show up in cities and basically diss the crowd. And because it's The Rock and he's so good at like playing with the crowd, he started randomly beating up wrestlers backstage, making them bleed, dropping the F-bombs, which are all things that the WWE has stayed away from. They wanted to be a family-friendly product. But because of The Rock coming back, all this edgy stuff has come out. And Cody Rhodes, who's been trying to get the championship for 2 years, finally won the match at WrestleMania 40. And it was not just like, he didn't just win the match. All the previous legends of WWE came back to help him. John Cena came back. The Undertaker came back. There's a character called Seth Rollins who has a different B story with the champion Roman Reigns because he betrayed him 10 years ago because of which Roman Reigns turned into a villain.
Did Hulk Hogan come back or is he not a WWE character?
Oh, he didn't. Hulk Hogan didn't come back. But The Rock fought the night before and The Rock won the match. Anyway, long story short, the matches were brilliant. It was one of the best nights of wrestling. That's the on-screen reason, is the wrestling was great. The characterization was great. The off-screen reason is the WWE was run by a man called Vince McMahon. Okay.
Okay.
Vince McMahon used to play a villain on screen in the WWE product, but he was the owner of the company. And it was an open secret that Vince McMahon is a terrible, terrible person.
Okay.
And a bunch of women and ex-employees have come out with their allegations a couple of months ago this year, in January this year. And they have sued Vince McMahon. And if you read that charge sheet, it is horrible. There are allegations of Vince McMahon defecating on his employees. Okay. Like that's the level of insane. And for people who know Vince McMahon, they're like, yeah, of course, he's the kind of man. So Vince McMahon had to let go of all of his
shares.
And he's the one running wrestling for the 39 years of the 40 years of WrestleMania. He has been the one in charge. This was the first WrestleMania without Vince McMahon. So there was this air of wrestlers.
Will they, won't they? Will they be able to do it? Will they be able to pull it off?
And it was a sigh of relief that finally we get to do things the way we wanted. The evil bad man is out. Right now, the guy who's in charge of WWE is a wrestler called Paul Levesque, who goes by the ring name Triple H.
Mm-hmm.
Any wrestling fan from the late 90s or early 2000s would know Triple H was one of the most legendary bad guys. Who's married to Vince McMahon's daughter, by the way, Stephanie McMahon.
Okay.
And it's considered that Stephanie McMahon and Triple H actually had been trying to get Vince McMahon off the ownership board for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole internal business succession tussle that has been going on, which you can read about online. That's a whole different WWE-worthy story that's been going on offstage. So this was the first WrestleMania where the wrestlers actually got, like, the ringmaster is gone. Now the circus animals can actually have their day in the sun. So
when the guards are away, the inmates will play, yeah?
The inmates got to play, yes, exactly. So if you see the last 10 minutes of WrestleMania 40 Night 2, You can find clips on Twitter online. It's just when Cody Rhodes won that championship, the entire locker room showed up to lift him on his lift him on their shoulders. You could see a palpable joy in everybody because this was like the culmination of a fight they'd been fighting backstage and in the locker room, where they're like, finally, we have a winner who's worthy and we can get behind him and we are happy. So WrestleMania 2, this fake sport of where men and women beat each other up, ended with like grown-up men crying man tears of like, oh, finally.
We get to be free.
Yes.
That
the bad guys
insane.
The bad guys will pay the price. The good guys will end up on top. And it was all just so
emotionally
brilliant.
The last overwhelming. 10
minutes, they, emotional. They had all these previous wrestlers show up. So if you've been someone watching wrestling since you were a kid, it was like so much catharsis that everybody showed up. And yeah, WrestleMania 40 was everything I wanted it to be. And more.
You know,
do you have any questions then?
If we'd had this conversation like a year ago, I would have been like, I don't think I would have had any sympathy for what you were feeling right now. But last year, I made the decision to get into sports. And I sort of understand how important and vulnerable and emotionally important the human element of sport and the narrativizing of the human element of sport is. Because ultimately, it's a story about human persistence and human moxie, right? So good for you, Abbas.
Cody Rhodes won, and then his mom came into the ring and gave his championship to his mother. And the whole thing was because The Rock, as the bad guy, had been taunting his mother, saying, "I'll beat him up in front of you. I'll make him bleed," and all of that. So then The Rock got chokeslammed by The Undertaker so that he can not do anything. And Cody Rhodes gave the championship to his mother. It was just, and his nephews and nieces and wife and kids were in the ring, and he was surrounded by all the good guys. It was just so heartwarming. Anyway, wrestling is amazing.
I'm glad that worked out well. I do not know enough about wrestling to be commenting on this, but
you know what? So I'll say this for anybody who's not into wrestling, please check out the last 10 minutes of the final match of night 2, and just see the
jubilation,
the flood of emotions, jubilation that happened. Yeah, it was wonderful. Like 70,000 people in the stadium who all go nuts when Cody Rhodes wins.
Interesting. Sport as a spectacle is always something that's been very close to my heart, which is why when I found out that, you know, we're talking about wrestling, I remember that Roland Barthes essay about the world of wrestling and how it plays up emotions. Yeah. So the audience has, you know, the audience is aware that this is not an authentic storytelling, but they sacrifice it because they love that exaggeration of it, because they love the notion of justice that comes with wrestling and its exaggeration. Emotions. And I feel like this one is very much about the justice of it. If you read the article, at the very end, it says that, you know, when you're anonymized, like, you know, your wrestler will play up his persona for the ring. And then eventually he'll just leave with his wife, like an anonymous person. And, you know, all your notions of justice have been satisfied, and all your notions of what is a spectacle have been satisfied. And you realize it's, you know, very similar to morality and to, you know, what humans have been trying to accomplish with God. So I feel like, I understand why this, because I mean, I'm a recent sports fan, so I understand why it is so valuable. And I'm glad you got to, you along with, I don't know, 70,000, 80,000, however many fans.
70,000 just in the stadium. And there are millions watching.
I mean, millions of watch. So I'm glad that you and millions others got to have their catharsis and to watch like something they so beloved, some beloved childhood storyline conclude in this wonderful manner. And wow, I'm kind of emotional right now, you know. I get it. I thought I was going to joke about it, but you know what, I get it. I quickly have to ask, who is your favorite wrestler? Is that the thing I can ask?
I mean, my favorite wrestler is The Rock, which is why I got back to watching week to week. I used to marginally keep up with what's happening in the storyline, but The Rock showing up again was like the pivotal point where I got back in. And he was just so, like, none of us expected him to become a bad guy again, because I'm like, he's selling beauty products and he's like the face of so many brands. There's no way he'll become a bad guy again. what he did, and
but he did
played
that.
The bad guy so well, and him playing the bad guy so well is why the good guy winning makes it so much more special.
That is so true.
So yeah, but yeah, The Rock is my favorite wrestler, and he showed up. So this morning, the fallout, what happened was The Rock has now gone away to shoot a few movies, but before going, he has issued a challenge to Cody Rhodes.
That I'm gonna come back, as they say, sports got me through a bad time in life by making it worse. So I guess, you know, I can't afford another obsession, but you can come back and tell me what happens next. And
I
think I'll ask Shubham to just unnecessarily link the Roland Barthes essay about the world of wrestling.
Yes, please.
Because I want to be boring and pedantic. So please go and read that. It's quite interesting, actually. And it actually does play about the emotional spectacle of the sport, which is quite interesting to me always.
All right. That brings us to the end of this week on that very emotional wrestling note. That brings us to the end of this particular episode. Thank you, Ms. Rathore.
Thank you, Mr. Momin.
And that's a wrap.
Thank you for your subscription. You're changing the world by changing the way news is funded. For the smoothest News Laundry experience, download the News Laundry app. It is the best way to listen to our paywall podcasts. And you'll also get access to all free News Laundry shows. Keep us ad-free and subscriber-funded. Help us grow. Tell people who listen to you to pay to keep news free. Subscribe to News Laundry. Keep journalism independent.